The following podcast has been recorded under the influence of alcohol. While not intentionally offensive, things are said, feelings may be hurt, and so not given. Clearly, it's the beer's fault.
The Good Beer Bad Movie Night Podcast.
Welcome to episode 59 of Good Beer Bad Movie Night, a podcast dedicated to movies of questionable quality and the frosty adult beverages that help make them tolerable. Dave is already expressing how excited we are for this episode because tonight's feature presentation from 1999 is the box office bomb Wild Wild West.
It wasn't a bomb, actually. It made money.
Did it really?
Yeah.
Overseas. Thanks to overseas sales.
Thanks, right.
It did not make enough to make up what it cost in America. Because this was the most expensive movie of all time at that time that it was made.
Was it?
$170 million or something
like that?
Yeah, $170 million.
And if you use like today's money, it's still like a really high cost movie.
You really lost the end of that.
So anyway, Dave, being our birthday boy, this is a birthday month. So Dave, being the birthday boy, being the chooser of said film, gets the honors of the 6-minute synopsis today. Where he's going to take 6 minutes to summarize this completely shitty movie. After that, we're going to take a quick break, come back with the evening's choice of beverage, which will lead into our discussion of said dumpster fire of a film. After which, we'll wrap up. Or we'll have another beer. We'll wrap up the evening with a six-pack rating, where we let you know just how drunk you need to be to enjoy this film. And let me tell you, folks, it's a lot.
Pretty drunk.
Pretty drunk.
Well, I mean, Dave did tell us last month when he said that he was going to pick a movie that he wouldn't tell us what movie he was going to pick. And Pete, you said, "Oh, you're a dick." And then you laughed. Ha ha ha. And he said, and I quote,
"Oh, no.
You call me a dick and you're laughing now, but next month you're just going to go, 'Dave, you're a dick,' over the movie that I picked." So,
Dave, you're a dick.
You're a dick.
Yes, you're sorry now.
I think we all are very sorry, and our listeners will be also. Speaking of dicks, Dave, how you doing?
I'm suffering, but I'm so glad I'm taking you guys with me.
Oh, God. This ship is going down fast, let me tell you.
Yes, I might have been hoisted by my own petard on this one, but as long as I blew you guys up too, that's okay with me.
Oh, we're all drowning in our sorrow. Kathleen, hi.
Hello. You know, it is your birthday. You are allowed to pick something you like.
This is well within your means.
I like
your rights.
Torturing
to
everybody.
Fuck with you guys.
I know, which is fine. But I always feel like your plan is to fuck with us, and then
you forget, I gotta watch it too.
Right, exactly. You end up shooting yourself in the foot while also shooting at us.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? Okay, I am going to admit that. I farted in the car and we're all smelling it. And I really stuck myself out with this one. This is pretty bad.
Oh, boy. Finally, Troy, how are you, sir?
I'm hanging in there. It's been rough, man.
Me too. My name is Pete. Oh, I wish I wasn't here today.
I mean, we're
glad
just
you started this podcast.
Like, we could just be like, you know what? This was so bad. We're just not even going to bother. And
thank you, folks. We'll see you next month. Bye.
Yeah.
Do we still get beer?
No. Of course. Although the beers that you have selected tonight, I am very excited about. So
cool.
Let's get to that beer and try to avoid talking about this movie as much as possible.
We've done it before.
Dave, our 6-minute synopsis, you have 6 minutes to summarize this movie.
Correct.
Nose to tail, as a horse goes.
What?
Stem to stern,
Nose to yeah, tail. That yeah. makes sense.
No,
bumper
I get
to bumper.
It.
Right. Nose
right,
to tail.
Right.
Okay. I'm working on a shtick here.
Get, yeah. I mean,
help me out.
It works.
I suppose. Anyway, right. You get 6 minutes. You guys figure this out.
Are you ready, Dave?
Cry in sure. a corner somewhere.
All right. Ready? Set? Go.
All right, we open on a terrified man wearing a big magnetic collar chased by and eventually decapitated by a big flying circular saw blade, which is then retrieved by General Bloodbath McGrath. After the opening credits, cut to West Virginia and Jim West bathing in a big train water tower with a beautiful woman when General McGrath's men arrive to pick up weapons from McGrath and who apparently Jim had been waiting for. McGrath's men, I could say McGrath one more time, accidentally and improbably knocked down the tower and Jim to the ground where he is forced to beat them up naked, then chases down a runaway wagon full of nitroglycerin or something. Cut to a bar / brothel, so I don't even know what this place is, where we find McGrath looking to make a weapons deal and find a prostitute who's very obviously Kevin Kline playing a man and playing a woman. There's something about Kevin Kline singing, then using mechanical gadget boobs to hypnotize McGrath after Jim West arrives. We discover both Jim and Mr. Mechanical Boobs, who's Artemis Gordon, are both trying to bring in McGrath, who escapes the confusion and the nitroglycerin explodes, and who cares? Observing this from afar is Arliss Lovelace and an entourage of women. I'm not sure exactly why that is. Okay, cut to Washington, D.C., where West arrives for an audience with President Grant and discovers Artemis Gordon has impersonated the president perfectly. That will play later, I'm sure. Anyways, President Grant explains that Lovelace has been kidnapping a bunch of scientists and plans to take over the country or something and orders West and Gordon to go stop him while Grant heads to Utah for the joining of the Transcontinental Railroad, which officially puts this movie in May of 1869. Since each blames the other for losing McGrath 2 scenes ago, we are now set up for some rivalry hijinks that never really land. West and Gordon head to the train station, West on his horse and Gordon on some kind of jet-propelled power bicycle that will come into ridiculous play later. Gordon really leaves with the train, forcing West to chase it on horseback when we discover the train is some kind of stupid gadget train with swinging mallets and a hatch in the ground and big spring-loaded ejectors and the severed head of a man in the first scene, which Gordon and West use to figure out where to go by shining a light through its eyes or something. I don't care anymore. Anyway, they use the head to figure out that they're going to some rich white redneck costume party in New Orleans. Anyway, something about fake boobs and a boner joke in there, and then we're all at a costume ball. West and Gordon investigate and the party independently. West just walking around willy-nilly and Gordon shows up in costume. West sneaks in and sees a confusingly unnecessary entertainer played by Selma Hayek, and I don't remember her character's name because none of this movie should be committed to memory anyway. West is encountered by a beautiful Asian woman who works for Lovelace. There's a horrible East meets West joke, and now I'm impatiently waiting for this movie to end. We're then introduced to Lovelace himself as he appears. Lovelace himself appears in an exploding Lincoln effigy where he discovers he's in a wheelchair, having lost the lower half of his body to the service of the Confederacy. West meets Lovelace, and there's a strained exchange of racist puns and ableist puns, and now I officially hate this movie. West is ambushed and goes to tell Gordon where he thinks Gordon is still dressed as a woman, drums on an actual woman's boobs, and is pulled out by a lynch mob and a stretchy fake rope provided by Gordon. Oh God, what the hell is happening here? While West is about to be lynched, Gordon rescues Selma Hayek, who's the daughter of one of the kidnapped scientists. They make a dumb escape. The movie isn't ending fast enough. Later, we find Lovelace and McGrath on an ironclad ship where... God damn it. Hold on. Sorry. On an ironclad ship where... McGrath's men are waiting on shore and receive new weapons from Lovelace instead. Lovelace kills McGrath's men with a weapon and an armored swiveling tank as a revenge for he and General Lee's murder at Appomattox. He packs up a swiveling tank into a fancy armored gadget train, and I hate this movie. West and Gordon arrive to see McGrath and his dead assholes, and we discover that this is the same way the New Liberty Massacre was, and from a dying McGrath, we learn that Lovelace, not McGrath, is responsible for the New Liberty Massacre. Selma Hayek's character, Rita, her name's Rita, actually serves a purpose and tells the duo that Lovelace is in Utah, which is also where President Grant's supposed to be. They leave her behind, but she sneaks on board, and there's supposed to be some kind of clumsy sexual tension there, and there's a butt joke and Selma Hayek's heaving bosoms and whatever. The next day, they're behind Lovelace's armored tank, and then they're in front of it because steampunk stuff. West uses steampunk gadgets to sneak onto Lovelace's train, and some dumb stuff happens, and it all blows up, and West is back on his own steampunk gadget train, but then Rita's heaving boobs and thinks that it's bad guys and sleep gases all three of them. They wake to find Lovelace has stolen the train instead of simply killing them. He puts Weston Gordon in those stupid magnetic collars and a nearby circular saw blade launcher. They get chased around for a bit, fall into mud, and through the magic of extremely lazy writing, get themselves out. The night they see a wasp kill a spider, which is gross but totally real thing, and that comes into play later in the stupidest way. The next day, the terrible writing fairy visits again and sends them directly to Lovelace's secret desert lair just in time to see the villain himself at the helm of an 80-foot steam-powered mechanical spider with iron legs and belching smokestacks heading off to Promontory Point to go attack the president with a big mechanical spider, I guess. Gordon uses his President Grant disguise for some reason, and they're both captured anyway, so that was pointless. Back at his spider lair in Spider Valley or whatever, we see Spider Lovelace's plan was to use the scientist to make his big metal spider so he could redivide the U.S. and give it back to the original colonizers like Spain and France and England, or maybe sell it back. Who cares? Gordon is about to get shot when Will Smith or West or whatever shows up just as a belly dancer and somehow titillates Lovelace for long enough to use a steampunk boom flamethrowers and escape. And God damn it. And Lovelace escapes with the president on his big dumb spider when he demands Grant surrender the United States or he blows up a town. The president refuses, so he blows up a town. Why isn't this movie over yet? And here's where that wasp thing comes in from earlier. Gordon retrofits his rocket bicycle with a Da Vinci-inspired flying machine to attack the giant spider. It's a big dumb fight. They chuck Lovelace out of a hatch. They rescue the president. Rita's father's actually her husband for some reason. The president takes the train and they ride the spider home, and everyone involved in the movie should be ashamed of themselves. Finn.
6 minutes, 2 seconds, 58.
So all right.
All right.
You're good.
Yay.
You are within the window.
Well yeah. Done, Dave. The amount of
pain in your voice.
Though. Oh.
Yeah. For a comedy, I sure didn't laugh a lot.
Yeah.
We'll get to that.
Yeah. I think I laughed once.
I think I laughed more at Pete's mic falling off the table.
Shut up, you.
In the middle of your synopsis, it was like, no, we're going to mess up, Dave. Don't laugh. And I did through the whole movie.
Yes, I get to hold my mic right now for a little bit while we fix this. So how about this? Thanks, Dave. That was awful. I mean, the movie was awful. Your 6 minute was fine. Yeah. Let's go get a beer while I fix this equipment.
All right.
Here we go. We'll be right back.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
I like a beer that's titled Lake Erie Monster because, you know, I like Lake Erie.
Yeah.
And you're a monster.
And I'm a monster. That's right. There you go.
I'm a little surprised you found this. This is usually a late summer. It's a seasonal beer, if I remember right. Maybe they've changed it. Maybe they're doing it year-round.
Apparently it was available in January.
Huh.
It's like it is limited. You're correct. It is a seasonal. I remember this. I couldn't remember if I liked it or not.
What a nose on this thing, man. It has got a...
Kathleen is not going to like this.
I mean, it smells like grass already.
Yeah.
No, it smells anyway. Like juicy, juicy fruit.
Where are you?
Juicy, juicy fruit, really?
Oh, wow. I mixed those up.
Oh, man. That is so good.
Lake Erie Monster.
Yes. This is the Lake Erie Monster. Issue a small craft advisory. This South Bay Bessie-inspired brew launches an intense hop attack amid torrid tropical fruit flavors. I can't get it out.
Fruit flavors?
Fruit flavors.
It happens to the best. A smoot foodie. Sometimes I cannot say fruit smoothie, and I have ordered a smoot fruity multiple times. I'm sorry. I'll take the smoot fruity. I mean, and they just go, yeah, we know.
We got like, that. Yeah.
I'm obviously not the only one.
It's spoonerisms. Yeah. All the smootiest of fruities. Okay, so, yes. So the Lake Erie Monster Imperial IPA, it's a really cool design on the can. It looks like a sea monster. Two types of hops. It's Simcoe and Willamette hops. Two Robust Malt and Caramel 30 malts. It comes in 16-ounce cans, 4-pack. It's weighing in right now at a pretty muscular 9.5 ABV.
Respect this beer.
Yeah.
Oh.
And the IBUs are 80, so it's going to be a little on the hoppier side, but not by that much. It's going to be probably pretty balanced according to the Geary. Now, for those
negative
listeners.
Negative Ghost Rider.
The lawn in this that you do.
Oh, it's more juicy. It's more pine. Like it's more sticky pine kind of thing.
Yeah, you like that, right?
Davey likes.
Oh yeah, that's habit forming.
Yeah, that's got some. It's got some really good fruity, juicy. Is it lychee nut?
Yeah, it's like a tropical sort of.
Yeah, there's definitely a fruity, tropical fruit to this.
Yeah, it's not. It's not that grapefruit hop. It is, but it's definitely a fruit. It's.
Yeah,
I'm not getting the pine that you get, but your palate is so unrefined. I can't even look at you right now. I'm number one, am I?
Number 11.
Well, I did just get done with an Irish ale, so that might, maybe that malt is
maybe
down
some
of the
water to cleanse your palate.
Not your palate.
But I like this. my palate is very happy now. I don't want to mess with it.
We should have shared one of these. Holy shit.
Yeah, it's going to be.
Yeah. Imperial IPA for sure. What'd you say? 9.5?
9.5.
Oh god.
With 80 IBUs. It's that tastes alcoholic.
Yes.
Like I can.
It is hot.
Like yeah, at the end.
Oh really? I was just gonna say I don't feel it. I don't feel it coming down. I mean like.
No, it's not like a harshness, but like afterwards, like after I'm drinking, like I actually put my beer down and I feel like I've been drinking whiskey.
Mm. Yeah, there's a little bit of that coating of the mouth.
Yeah,
with alcohol,
like the fume in there.
Mm-hmm. But like you know, you swallow some things, and it's like it goes down hot. Like you can literally feel it going in your esophagus, and like that's just it's nice and smooth. And I really like this a lot.
With beer, I don't find a lot of that hotness going down. It's always
we've had a couple recently. Mm-hmm. It seems like where there was some something that were like wow that's.
Is that the beer or your acid reflux?
Well, you may have me there, sweetie. But I like this a lot.
Yeah, would you say this is pretty representative of Imperial IPAs?
Yeah, big, hoppy, malty. Yeah, that you get that 9.5% because of all the malt in it, the malt bill. Because
it's pretty sweet.
You need more.
Yeah.
You need more potential sugar to get the alcohol out of it. So the more sugar you add to it, the more you're going to get it, the more alcohol you're going
to
get out of
it. The fruit flavor, though, is a little different from what I'm used to. You're not getting the grapefruit. You're not getting the
citrus rind.
The citrus.
Yeah.
It's a lot more. I can't quite place it. There's a flavor that I'm getting. I'm like, I know that flavor. I cannot put.
It's malt for me. Like it just tastes like a really a lot stronger of a malt flavor than I was ever expecting out of an IPA. But considering how big it is and how high in alcohol it is. I can sort of understand why now.
If the hops were 80, did you say?
The hop IBUs or 80? Yes. Simcoe and Willamette hops.
The Simcoe hops are fun. That's what the Willamette is like, a kind of a base hop where it's real steady and cool. It just kind of lays there and just adds a little bit of flavor. But those Simcoe. That's where I think maybe that's where you're getting the citrus from, because the Simcoe is a unique hop, much like, not like Amarillo, but like Amarillo, it has a very distinct flavor.
Okay.
Amarillo and Simcoe both have some really interesting flavor profiles.
I like it. I like it a lot.
Whew.
Whereas this like a warrior is going to punch you in the nose.
A warrior?
Warrior hops will punch you in the nose.
Oh, okay.
But Simcoe.
I thought you just took like a really sharp left turn in the conversation. Like these Simcoe hops are really, you know, that citrusy. But if you get a car accident, you can really get injured.
Yeah.
Right.
And I love Oreo cookies.
Injured, Dave. Look. Yeah.
I run real fast.
The purpose of Good Beer, Bad Movie Night is not to hurt us. You know, there's not like a contest to see who can get the worst movie. It's not the good beer
and to get us
worst
the drunkest
movie ever. And to get us the
drunkest. This is why I have chosen some pretty high octane beers tonight, because we might need them.
I needed this while I was watching the damn movie. Although I think I was drinking whiskey when I was.
You were. Actually, I've got some pretty funny texts from.
Oh, texts from Pete.
From Pete. I know it's been a hot minute since I. It never fails that whatever day Pete decides to watch the movie is the worst possible day for me to get 1,000 fucking text messages from him. And it's it's always like I'm always trying to do something, and it's like just like, you know,
it's on purpose. I call Troy and I say, "Hey, look, what's the worst day I could start texting Kathleen?"
Oh yeah, the worst one was the time when I was trying to drive. I was driving somewhere, and I was trying to listen to like audiobook or music or whatever, streaming it through like, my
bing,
phone.
Bing, bing.
And every time, even with my notification turned off, the sound would dip for a second every time he would send a message, and I was just like, I'm going to kill him. I'm going to kill him. He doesn't even know what he's doing. I'm going to kill him.
Oh, audiobook.
That's great.
Yeah. So it started out like you were mad right away. Like right away.
Yes.
Because something about the theme song. You don't even have. This says you don't even have three original theme song, which I was like,
oh, I might have typed
that
wrong.
Three original theme. I think I was like, fuck, he is wasted already. Oh,
my bitch was. So I went back. I went back and I watched a bunch of the old TV episodes, and they didn't use the original theme song to open up the film. Go fuck yourself, movie.
Right. I mean, did they use some sort of like modern hip hop-ized version?
No, no, it was not the same thing.
Write a song,
a very catchy tune, the Wild Wild West.
That was right,
everybody heard it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was at the end credits, but before the end credits, there was a bit that was the theme. The
correct,
old theme.
It was they saved it for the end of the film.
Yeah, like, but the end credits was that the Wild Wild West song that was actually, well, that song was "I Wish" by Stevie Wonder off the "Songs in the Key of Life" album. Not that I love that song or anything, and that Wild Wild West thing is actually Kool Moe Dee.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, interesting.
Oh.
I picked those out pretty fast. I mean, the Stevie Wonder I definitely picked out. I just had to think about it to remember that it was Kool Moe Dee that did that Wild Wild West song.
So yeah, that was my first beef with the film is that they're remaking the Wild Wild West, and it's like, hey, we're going to remake the A-Team, but we're not going to use the theme song.
Yeah.
Eat shit.
That's just silly.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, okay. I have a feeling that a lot of the problem with this movie, first of all, let's get this out of the way. Will Smith, he was actually asked to be in another movie, and he turned it down to do this one. And that movie that he turned down was The Matrix. I think
the
if you don't know that, you should know that, because
right. He turned down being Keanu Reeves'
yes.
character.
He turned down the Neo part of The Matrix.
Because he liked this property. He liked Wild Wild
West.
Well,
I don't think he wanted to do any more sci-fi stuff. Or
I don't know.
What sci-fi had he done?
No, maybe.
Men in Black?
Maybe I'm wrong. No, I don't.
Independence Day, Men in Black.
Independence Day.
Oh, yeah. I guess those would have come, because this was, what, 99?
Yeah.
Those would have come before.
So he decided to do steampunk instead.
Uh-huh.
And plus, The Matrix, like, some people didn't do, like, I know that Sean Connery turned down The Matrix because he didn't understand it. So he's just like, I don't understand it, so.
To be what character in The Matrix?
No, he was the architect for the second Matrix.
Oh.
I think he was asked to do that. He didn't understand it, so he's like,
Yeah.
Like, not that he couldn't understand the concept. He just didn't quite get where he was going to be in the script.
I think I remember reading that when they just didn't impress him, and he's like, I don't think that they are going to make a good movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Boy, is his face red.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Oh, he said that it's the biggest mistake of his career, which, yeah, you're right.
I mean,
there's a trivia on IMDb where they said that Will Smith asked his mom how she liked the movie, and she said, "You've done better, baby."
I don't see Will Smith being Neo. I think that movie would have been really different.
Yeah,
he actually said that on a GQ interview where he talked about he said. Yeah, I did this instead of Matrix. I really messed up, but Keanu and Lawrence Fishburne did such a good job. I probably would have messed it up. So you're welcome, world. I didn't fuck up the Matrix.
That's a good. Well, he's got plenty of fuck you money. So
yeah.
Well,
that's kind of what I was. It's crazy. They have Will Smith and Kevin Kline, two of the most charismatic people on the planet.
Kenneth Branagh.
Yeah, Kenneth Branagh.
Yeah, freaking yeah. Kenneth Henry the Fifth Branagh.
Yeah, yeah.
And just
and a legendary producer and a legendary director.
Producer. Are you talking about John Peters?
Yeah.
He's done a lot of cool
stuff. I
think that he fucked this movie up.
He's kind of an asshole. Well, not kind of. He is an asshole.
Absolute asshole.
Oh, but really? He's done a lot of great things. And so is, what, Sondheim? Is that the director?
Soderbergh. No.
Barry Sonnenfeld.
Sonnenfeld.
Yeah. Anyway.
The Man in Black guy.
I got all. Yeah. Right. He's done a ton of great films.
I have a feeling that this movie was fucked up by John Peters.
Everything was, the stars had aligned for this movie, and it was a hot mess.
Because you heard the Kevin Smith story, is that what you're talking about? Yeah, where Kevin Smith told a story about how when he was writing Superman Lives, which was supposed to be the Nick Cage Superman movie, which
directed by Tim Burton.
Thank God we missed that one.
Yeah, I cannot fucking picture.
Thank the Lord.
Honestly, I mean, sometimes you need something real fucking weird out there in the world.
Yeah, that would be weird.
Because it's not like, I mean, you walk away from the Christopher Reeves Superman and it's not like we've got something phenomenal. You know what I mean? Aside from those, I'm saying we did those. Amazing. Every iteration of Superman that has come after that starring anybody has been not great. So why not have a really fucked up weird
Before the other stuff. I mean, that would have been between the Brandon Roth and the Henry Cavill Superman.
Well, anyway.
Well, then maybe the Brandon Roth and Henry Cavill would have looked a hell of a lot better if the Nick Cage thing had happened.
Anyway,
I digress.
Kevin Smith was talking about how when he was writing that script, John Peters was supposed to be the producer, and he came to him and said, I want Superman to fight a giant spider.
Yep.
And Kevin Smith's like, why? What? Where did this come from? He's like, I want a giant spider in this film. And so he wrote it, and I think that was one of the, he's like, after that, things kind of fell apart, and it was not a bad thing for it to have fallen apart. But then he said, I watched Wild Wild West, and there's that fucking giant spider. And it's like, eh.
That sneaked into a couple other things. First of all, John Peters owns the rights to Superman, which is why he is like, and Batman, a lot of the DC properties.
Dear God.
So like,
it's in the hands of a madman.
He was a producer on like the Christopher Nolan Batmans. He was ordered off the set because his just demands is because he's a fucking asshole. Because
he has notes.
Yeah, and he doesn't have any respect for the actual material. He just knows that it's going to make him money. That guy makes money, first of all. He's also been accused of sexual harassment.
I mean, the Kardashians also make money, but we're not talking about quality there.
Right. But that guy's attached himself to a lot of really profitable properties.
Right.
Like the Batman stuff, the Supermans, he does that. So like just about any action thing that you've seen him be a part of, you'll see little bits of his fingerprint. Like that spider thing. Have you guys seen Man of Steel?
Yeah.
I try to forget it.
Toward the end of it, the first Henry Cavill Superman?
Yeah.
Yeah, at the end, there was that big freaking gravity smasher creature thing, like machine that was blasting into the earth. What did it look like?
Spider-ish.
Really?
Yeah. It had multiple legs. Yeah. It was like a big spider.
I think you're right. Yeah. I saw that movie once.
I think that guy needs to get some therapy to figure out what the fuck his big spider thing is.
I think that he needs to release control of those properties to somebody who actually gives a shit about the property.
Yeah.
Who actually respects the source material.
That's why we haven't had a good Superman. This fucker's got
John
the
Peters.
Rights to it.
Yeah.
And Warner Brothers in general just does not respect their intellectual property. They don't respect any of the stuff. Okay, let's take Alien. Alien was an amazing movie. Aliens was an amazing movie. So what do? They crank out as many of them as possible until they squeeze it until it's no longer respectable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they did the same thing with like Predator, which was just a terrifying creature. And then they just
I thought those first two were real good, but the rest of them were like, whatever.
Yeah, but they just kept doing like Aliens versus Predator and all that stuff. They're like, oh yeah, and let's make toys and let's do.
They
like,
got the wrong screenwriters because all they had to do was go to Dark Horse, which were doing some phenomenal comic books and just
because oh my god, I think the problem with this, the thing that made me the most mad about this movie is that they want this to be an action comedy, and
it should have been an action comedy.
And they tried apparently. But the like everything that they thought was funny, like there are all these setups where they're like, here's a joke, and they just lay it out there. It's like, wow, not funny.
Not funny.
Not at all.
Yeah.
And you have one of the great comedic actors of our generation, Kevin Kline.
Yeah.
Will Smith plays Will Smith in all his movies.
But he can be very funny.
But he can be very funny and very charming.
Mm. Right.
I think Kevin Kline is a fantastic comedic actor.
Yes.
He's amazing.
Yes. Kevin Kline is
Fish
incredible.
Called Wanda and Dave are wonderful.
Fish Called Wanda.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, he's a great comedic actor. I think that Salma Hayek was dreadfully underutilized for a character. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
She could have been completely written out of this film and no one would have missed her.
Oh, yeah.
And
the
I
reveal,
love
like,
Selma Hayek. I think she's great.
Yeah.
And like the big reveal at the end, like, oh, this guy isn't actually my father. He's my husband. Like, who cares?
Yeah.
Where is it supposed to go?
I think that was we got to wrap this up. So let's tie this.
We needed to give her a reason to not pick either one of them.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I have a feeling that there was a lot of interference here, and that is that's definitely a Warner Brothers thing, because their studio execs would be like, no, write it until it makes money, like put it in front of people, let them give their input, and then please them.
Which is ridiculous.
But it didn't make money.
It did make money. It made like $222 million.
Worldwide. Wait, but it cost 170.
Yeah.
So I mean,
it made money, which is actually even more disgraceful, because it was such a bad movie.
How much of the money, though?
It was all overseas.
Well, and like how much money that would go toward the overall total of money that they made also came from like the music and the marketing, because like
I think it's just the movie, though, made 220.
Well, I don't know, because sometimes you see those things and it's like. Overall total,
maybe
like they're counting in.
Well, there's a joke that a lot of this is the other movie that was out at the same time was American Pie, and they're like, I think everybody was buying tickets to Wild Wild West and then sneaking into American Pie to watch
it. It was South Park.
South Park was the other one.
That was one of the first movies where people would buy tickets
a ticket for Bambi and then walk into Porky's, right?
Oh, yeah, because this is PG-13,
yeah,
and the other one is probably R.
Yes,
South Park was R.
It was hard R.
Hard R. Well, yeah. as much as a cartoon can be a hard R, it was.
South Park, so.
Pretty good movie. Didn't it win an Oscar for Blame Canada?
Yeah.
I think it was nominated for an Oscar, for sure.
It was at least nominated.
Yeah.
I remember them singing it at the Oscar ceremony.
Yeah, this movie... I remember seeing the trailer for it back in 99 or 98 or wherever it was, and I remember seeing this big mechanical spider and the whole steampunk thing. I was like, oh, this is going to be cool. And I saw more trailers and I'm like, maybe it's going to be cool. And then I saw part of the movie later. I'm like, yeah. There is a good movie here.
There is a good movie to be had, but it was not this movie that we watched.
Yeah.
Because it's James Bond in the Wild Wild West.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a womanizing... gadget using super spy that should work on a number of levels, except not in this movie.
Yeah. I didn't like, so I've never watched the TV show of Wild Wild West or whatever.
I would like to talk about it later.
Yeah. So I did not like. Does the TV show use gadgets outside of what was available at the time that the story is supposed to be taking place?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Maybe not like a Leonardo da Vinci inspired
bicycle aeroplane.
Bicycle, yeah. Yeah. Not that extreme.
Okay. But like things that fling out of shirt sleeves and stuff like that.
Oh, for sure.
Okay. So I think that like, I think one of the big problems in this is that there was no chemistry between Will Smith and Kevin Kline.
Zero.
And I don't think
they liked each other.
See, well, I mean, I didn't do any research to see if there were any issues with that or not, but I have a hard time believing that two very charismatic people like the two of them couldn't fake that. So I feel like the chemistry comes from the writing.
Mm-hmm.
Like what they had to say to each other, you couldn't deliver the lines that they had to say to each other but still be like buddy buddy with each other. Like Tommy Lee Jones, not really known as being like a lovable characteristic charismatic kind of guy. He's kind of gruff and standoffish and sort of does his own thing, and he has a very hard-nosed gruff character in Men in Black, and Will Smith is Will Smith.
Right.
And that's great chemistry between the two of them.
Well, that is the straight man, funny man.
Right.
And in this movie, you had Funny Man and Funny Man.
Right.
Yes.
And you don't make a good movie out of two Funny Men.
Right.
Abbott and Costello. Laurel and Hardy. You need a Funny Man and you need a straight man. And neither of them would play the straight man.
Right. But neither of them were really the Funny Man either. Like, I think on paper.
Kevin Kline was the funniest person in this film.
Well, I think on paper, Kevin Kline's character is supposed to be the funny one. Because he's the one with all the gadgets and gizmos. I smoot-fruited that one. So, you know, he's the one that's got, you know, whatever. And Will Smith is I am the direct. Like, he doesn't want to wear the costume. He doesn't want to sneak into the thing.
Hero.
He wants to just walk through the door.
Action guy.
Right.
And you've got this silly inventor on your hip.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And I get that the idea is that they each come to each other's point of view. Will Smith ends up being dressed as a belly dancer. Kevin Kline, I guess, technically eventually uses a gun, but he still shoots the mechanical knee instead of the guy.
Right.
But, you know, what have you.
You can't have a movie with two funny men. Mm-mm. You can't have a movie with two straight men.
I'm going to say that Tommy Lee Jones technically was not a funny man.
No,
I mean, he's technically not a straight man. He gave really funny lines in a straight delivery.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
Which is what you needed.
Yeah.
You needed the blah, 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 and you needed the stoic.
Yeah.
Right.
Which
right.
is actually a line from Men in Black. Like, blah, 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 and Bob.
Thank you.
Right. Exactly. So, yeah, they were more Felix and Oscar from The Odd Couple, which are both straight and both funny men in that.
But
original
definitely a dynamic,
show,
yeah.
but there's a dynamic because the personalities are so different.
Right.
And I think that that's what the attempt was here, but the writing is just so bad.
I think we have a situation here like The Magnificent Seven, where you've got Yul Brynner and Steve McQueen that famously...
Eli Wallach.
Both of them thought that they were the lead. And they both had pretty much equal time on camera. But if you watch that movie really closely, every time Yul Brynner delivers a really awesome, because it's Yul Brynner for heaven's sakes. Oh my gosh, he's a legend. But every time he delivers a line, you see Steve McQueen over there fiddling with a cigarette or twirling a knife, and he's like, "I'm here too." I mean, so I think I felt like and same way we're like, who's the lead here? We can't decide who is, and I think there was a little bit of that in this movie where.
It's possible.
Where there wasn't a focused lead.
Well, the thing is, like, I think Will Smith was definitely the lead in the film.
Right, but the way Kevin Kline was acting, he was acting up his part.
I don't know. I just don't think that they had a good script.
They had script.
My notes just became me writing down things that the movie thinks is funny that were not funny. Like
I got to hear this.
Like Will Smith just repeating over and over, that's a man's head.
Oh, yeah. That should have been funny, and it wasn't because it was a terrible delivery.
Yeah.
And Kevin Kline's fake kung fu in the train. The whole breast thing, where they were like trying out, like, you put alfalfa in that, it should be water, and they're like feeling each other's breasts and the
train conductor.
We have our first part of homophobia there. Yeah, great. Hey, to cap off misogyny and extreme racism through the entire film.
They fall into the mud, and Will Smith sneezes on Kevin Kline, and then it says sorry. That wasn't funny. None of this was funny. Like eating a lizard in the desert. which was supposed to be a joke, like because like it was so obvious, like this Gila monster on a stick that Will Smith's just tucking into, and Kevin Kline is disgusted. That should have been funny. It wasn't.
Yeah.
I didn't understand
the whole thing. That James West as a dead belly dancer was just.
That was.
It came
I was
out of
honestly
nowhere.
Like
made me angry.
No.
Like, yeah. Well, and there were too many. There were too many time jumps for like they were getting to the end of that story. And like you mentioned in the synopsis of about of lazy writing, they just get out of that mud thing, you know, with, you know, whatever. Yeah. No,
done.
No.
Done with that scene.
Well, not only were they done with it, but they were also fucking clean. Their clothes were stained the color of the mud, but the metal collars were shiny and clean. And I was like, that's not possible. Like, that was super distracting.
So all right, let's just take that whole scene.
Do we have to?
Instead of being killed outright, just like shoot them in the head, boom, boom, and they're no longer problems.
Right.
You have to attach these magnetic collars to them.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
And then put a machine that will kill them.
Because it's got a blade that's attracted to the metal, yeah, the magnetic power.
That travels at you at like 12 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Or 10 miles an hour. Okay, fine. They're in a cornfield that has like a yawning chasm.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
In the middle of it.
Yes.
That they can jump in order to evade these blades.
Right.
Laziness number one.
Right. Where'd the cornfield come from? In the middle of the fucking desert.
In the middle of the desert, right.
And then, and also, who's going to farm a field with like a yawning abyss?
Right.
Down there with mud at the bottom of it.
Right.
And that there's, the fact that there is mud down there is laziness number two.
Yeah.
They jump in there and they're safe. They're alive.
Right.
Laziness number three. Earlier in that scene, he's like, oh no, they took all my tools and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then as they're floating in the whatever in the mud, he's like, oh, there's my extra toolkit.
Yeah. Well, and that's after somehow they managed to reverse the polarity of one of the magnets. So now the two collars are attracted to each other.
Yeah.
And they keep getting stuck to each other. Yeah.
In compromising positions.
Right.
Right.
Homophobia number two.
The knife from the boot gets stuck and then the belt buckle. And I was just like, yeah, that's not a thing. There's not enough metal in the boot of that, the toe of that boot, you know, or in that belt buckle to overpower just the two collars snapping together. Right. Like those should have, if that was really what was going on, and you've reversed the polarity, those two collars are snapped together. You're not going anywhere. You're face to face.
Not to mention that if they had reversed the polarity and they had leapt together to hold on to one another when they fell, the collars would have pushed them apart.
Yeah.
They would have never really
gotten together. No, the polarity thing happens magically right there.
Right.
It doesn't, it's somehow.
Right. So, beforehand, before the polarity like attracts them, it would have repelled them.
You're right.
Right.
When they jump
toward each other. Yeah, you're right.
Oh, there's so many things you could like nitpick about this fucking movie.
Right. So, okay. If you're going to play with technology that is essentially magic, it has to be as grounded in reality as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So that we don't, well, because if you ground it in as much reality as possible, we can suspend enough disbelief to believe that there's a giant mechanical spider.
Agreed.
Right.
So after that scene, he carries one of the collars around and it pulls him away suddenly to these railroad tracks. He's like, Lovelace's.
Drags him.
Yeah.
Drags him through the sand.
Bodily for many, many yards, many meters. And until it hits a railroad track, it's like, oh, Lovelace's secret
track. The private secret.
Secret track. And like, how did you know that? And also, why did the magnet suddenly just activate and drag you?
Right.
That was lazy writing number four.
Mm-hmm.
That's like number 72.
Yeah.
I was going to say.
Right.
I could have totally enjoyed this movie. All the way from nose to tail.
From spider to web.
If you would have gotten rid of all the race stuff.
Yeah.
Okay? Now hear me out. All this gadgetry, all this weirdness, it's Hollywood. It's a movie.
It's Toho
James
science.
Bond. It's Toho science. I don't give a rat's ass. This is just going to be good fun. But for heaven's sakes, if you want to do a Western that focuses on racism and what was going on back then, please do. It needs to be a drama.
Blazing Saddles would like to work with you.
or make it funny. Like Blazing Saddles. The way to make this movie better is just have Will Smith be Jim West, James Bond of the Wild, Wild West. This should be a popcorn, turn your brain off movie. And they try to shoehorn some really uncomfortable bullshit in this. Not that that stuff should be ignored, but in a movie like this, it has no place.
Okay, here's my issue. There's a couple of things, actually, about what we're talking about. One, Will Smith was miscast. If you have a black person playing a cowboy lead in 1869, and there were actually quite a lot of black cowboys,
sure.
But not a lot of black cowboys in the 9th Cavalry who fought in the...
Or as U.S. Marshals. Or...
Right. Although I don't think that 9th Cavalry was a thing in the Civil War. But it doesn't, whatever.
That don't matter.
If you're going to have a black cowboy in this time period.
Going to these places.
Right. You cannot necessarily ignore that this character is being played by a black person. Right. You can't. The failure in this, to what I think you're going for, is none of the story should have had anything to do with the Civil War. You could tell a James West Western story of people trying to get, like, a baddie trying to disband the United States and give all the pieces back to the countries of originally claimed the bits and pieces of it, without those people having been disgruntled Confederate soldiers and still not have ignored the fact that this is a black character. Right. And you could do it without it being like, oh God, I need a shower after watching this.
Right.
Right.
The movie is disgustingly uncomfortable.
Yes.
The homophobia, the misogyny, the racism, it's rampant and unnecessarily rampant for a popcorn summertime tent pole
and mildly
movie.
Terrifying to think that movie's only 23 years old.
I don't get it. In 1999, if I had seen this is a first time watch for me. So if I saw it in 1999, I would have been horrified. At least I hope I would have been horrified, because there is nothing.
I would have been too eye-rolly to be
I honestly don't know, because like there was a lot of stuff that you go back and look at those old movies, you're like, wow, that's some fucked up shit.
I feel like this isn't an old movie.
But the thing is, like, you've seen this done well. Like, Dave brought up Blazing Saddles, where they were gonna lynch the sheriff, and then he like pulls a gun on himself. And that's fucking hilarious. You're like a little cringe, but by the same token, that was good. That was great. This is just bad writing. It's just not good.
Mm-hmm. Where are the white women at?
Oh my God.
That's so fucked up. All right. Let's drink another beer.
Let's get, I think Troy's right.
Because like, we've, this is getting to the point where we're
getting
depressed.
It's getting awful. And I got some cool things in this next segment. So let's go grab Dave's other, oh God, Dave, did you really get that?
Yep.
The next, oh shit. Okay. So, good luck to us.
Here we go.
We'll see you in a bit.
Who wants an orange whip? Orange whip? Orange whip? Three orange whips.
What do we got, Dave?
Yes. One, two, three.
Sexy.
That is
now,
sexy.
Be careful and don't snort that.
That's funny. You're funny.
You know, I listened to the episode, and like my sinuses hurt listening to that. Like,
oh, because I accidentally tried to smell the beer and I snorted it.
Yes, snorted half the beer up your nose last time.
The whole
half the beer.
Oh my God!
Like a third.
We cracked our shits.
Yeah,
that
I
was
mean,
so funny.
We all laughed very hard, but then you spent like the next like 3-4 minutes like suffering in the background of the podcast while we continue to laugh and then talk about it.
Because I tried to nutty pot with a beer.
Oh yeah, yourself. That's what I said.
So wait, was this your revenge on us laughing at you? Wild West.
I'll get you all.
I'll make you watch Wild West.
Then again, you're just suffering twice. You suffered by snorting the beer, and then you suffered by watching the movie that you had to synopsize.
Speaking of beer, so this is Lexington Brewing and Distilling Company. This is the Kentucky Bourbon Barrel Ale. This is a fan favorite.
This is a fabulous beer.
Yes.
Ooh.
On their website, the description is, our Kentucky ale is aged in fresh decanted bourbon barrels from some of Kentucky's finest distilleries. Subtle yet familiar flavors of vanilla and oak are imparted into the special ale as it rests in the charred barrels. After aging for at least 6 weeks, the beer has grown to become the flagship beer of the premier name in barrel-aged beers, Kentucky Bourbon Barrel Ale. Pleasantly smooth and robust, it may also be served as an aperitif or after-dinner drink, which means it's going to be super, super high alcohol volume.
It's real hot.
This is the epitome of hot. If you have never really experienced what it's like to have a hot beer, this is going to be it. And it's not as high in alcohol as the last one.
No, this is, in fact, I think, what did I say?
8 point something or other.
Yes, I believe this is 8.2 with 19 IBUs. So this is going to be very malty.
It is definitely very malty. And it's hot.
It is caramel? Is that what that is?
Caramely. That's what it tastes like, right? That malt is it's just like chewing on a Kraft caramel square.
Dude.
That nose is like caramel. It smells like candy.
Yeah.
It really does.
It smells like candy. It tastes like candy. This is a good beer.
This is a very good beer.
Wait, I swear I've had this, but I don't remember.
I feel that same kind of whiskey burn on my tongue, like when I've had just
Do they do another one that's it's more smoky?
Probably.
I feel like I've had a bourbon barrel ale where it's like, it's that smoky whiskey flavor. Well, you could this is all caramel.
I don't know if you have Kentucky, but like, there are plenty of bourbon barrel whatever's out there, because it's just, it's a beer brewed and then tossed in a bourbon barrel of some sort for a particular amount of time.
Yeah, this is drinking. Done one this is drinking candy.
Not that I'm aware.
A bourbon barrel or a whiskey barrel beer.
Have I done that?
Have we done them for the
show? I don't know. I don't think so.
It sounds familiar, actually.
So people who don't know, for bourbon, there are a couple of rules that have to be followed in order for bourbon to be considered bourbon, like whiskey to be considered bourbon. One, it has to be made in the United States. Two, it has to be made by at least 51% corn. And the third one, the one that's relevant to what we're talking about, is that it has to be made in virgin charred oak casks, meaning these barrels were made, nothing was ever aged in them. Like, they were never used before. They charred the inside, and then they aged the spirit in there for X amount of years or whatever until it imparts that sort of caramel color. After those barrels are used, they can never be used for bourbon again. So those barrels are often shipped to different places, like scotch distilleries or like other
wineries.
Wine. Yes, exactly.
And they're recently beers.
Right. And so they're used to either age these beers or wines, or to impart different properties from these whiskey barrels. And I want to say that this started happening with beers like within the past 15 years, 10 years maybe?
I think this brewery has been around since
99,
is it? Yeah. I was going to say like 2000-ish.
Yeah.
So, relatively recent. I don't remember bourbon barrel anything until like the early 2000s.
Yeah.
Maybe the mid-2000s. I don't remember. And I'm sure some more savvy beer drinkers out there will have remembered them before I had. But yeah, it's a thing. And I think there's a lot of bourbons out there now, and there are a lot of secondary manufacturers that desire those casks. And I think it's great that you are able to use these things again and again.
Right. So this is first made in 2006. So you're on the nose on that one. Like,
okay.
It first came out in like the 2000s. It's an Irish red ale style. I am definitely getting like toasted caramel toffee.
Toasted. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, you hit the trifecta. Those. That is clearly what this is.
Yeah, and it is dangerously drinkable for something that's high of an ABV.
Yeah, you respect this one. It comes in a 12-ounce bottle. Was this in a 4-pack, Dave?
It should be, yes.
If it wasn't, it should be.
So, yes, definitely keep an eye on yourself, because it is very drinkable. And it will sneak up on
you. This is not a football game beer. This is a, this is a, I want to share this with some friends.
I might join the football team. If
Yeah, you shouldn't be knocking this back with a pint.
I got it.
Well, I definitely feel like this is one of those kind of beers that it makes sense to pour it in a glass, especially a short glass that doesn't hold the whole beer, because then you get that refill without actually opening a second bottle.
Yes.
So and like I think it slows you down a little bit.
I really like the Lake Erie Monster. This is even more drinkable. Like, I could chug this.
This is a lot more drinkable than Lake Erie. Lake Erie Monster was delicious, don't get me wrong.
It's a little sharp, maybe.
But it's a chore to get through a little bit.
A little bit.
This is so yummy.
Yeah. So you could probably tell like what this is, Pete. Like, what are those glasses that are sort of like, they look like snifters, but they're for beer? Like a tulip glass looking?
So that's what it is, a tulip glass.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, if it's in the shape of a tulip.
Yeah,
it's got a kind of a curvy look to it.
Yeah,
I mean, there's a snifter, and then it's got that lip.
Yeah.
That's tulip glass. And that's what you drink this out of.
Yeah,
sure.
That's what I feel like this would be best served in. Not like a freaking, like a dirty pint, you know, like those big straight.
A pint. Dirty pint glass.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Preferably with dishwater in it.
I can't wait to have a beer in a dirty
You probably are. We already have, I'm sure.
I'm sure. I'm certain.
Yeah. Have you ever drank a beer in public?
I've been to the Rockmore. You and me.
Rockmore,
been to
the yeah.
Oh, my God. The Rockmore.
For our listeners.
Stube.
Stube. Ooh, Mike's. Stube. Downtown. Have you been to Mike's?
Well, Mike's Grill.
Yeah. You.
Mickey's there in Grandview.
No, not Mickey's. No, not Mickey's. I draw the line at Mickey's.
Oh, come on.
Where are you going to karaoke if you don't go to Mickey's?
Right,
Mickey's is all gentrified now anyway. The floor is no longer sticky.
Ew.
Do they serve something besides
a
Coors Light now?
Floor at Mickey's? That's just, that's wrong.
I know.
Something not right.
They take credit cards now, too.
What?
I know.
We're old.
I know.
Fuck that bar.
So what is it, like
that
students going to?
That bar sold out.
What'd yeah, man.
Or like, is it become popular with students or something?
Yes. Well, because what happened, Campus Partners came in and ripped everything down. So all the students bled out into Grandview because it was the next
that's a good
place
right.
to go.
Yeah,
and what was the
place.
Cheapest place? Mm-hmm. The two cheapest places in Grandview, Mickey's and Johnny's on Glen. Nobody can find Johnny's.
It's hard to find.
Right.
Yes. I know where it is, but
right.
it's hard to find.
You got to know to go to Johnny's. So everybody went to Mickey's and everybody loves karaoke when they're 19 to 25. And that's what was Mickey's bread and butter.
Or 46.
Well, that's sure, but, yeah, you know, talking about the demographic that's invading.
46 in this room. It doesn't matter. Okay. Sorry.
As long as they didn't discover Burns, I was fine with that. Like,
right.
Just
leave
my
Burns
alone.
I mean,
it's just down the road from Woodlands, isn't it?
Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
That's true.
Then they found it.
Damn it. All right. Well,
I haven't been to
fine.
Burns in years.
Let's go down to Burns.
I'm sure that this whole conversation is really fascinating to our non-Columbus listeners.
Right.
We're
yes.
cutting this.
We'll
it's
cut
okay.
all this out. It's fine.
We can or we don't need to. Whatever.
Okay. You said you have several things that you want to share.
I do, but I want you to go
well,
first.
The only thing that I was going to say is at the very beginning of the movie, I would like, I want that pin that Kevin Klein is wearing. When he's first being
the boxer pin,
yes, that's the big
the
flower, and it like punches somebody.
It's that's so good.
If anyone out there is of the Etsy persuasion and has the talent to make me
describe it,
some kind of it's a big flower that
right,
you wear like
right.
a brooch on your shirt,
and if some bro gets
and
too close,
if some anybody gets
anybody,
too close.
Right.
It has some kind of mechanism. I'm assuming something maybe in the sleeve
apparently
or whatever.
Like
it's a
really
spring-loaded boxing glove.
Right, and it just shoots out and just punches somebody.
That was real good.
So you're saying that parent-teacher conference night would be really interesting?
Yeah.
In that way.
Well, I mean, I prefer the Zoom conference now.
I had some hopes for the movie when that happened. Like, okay, we might have some funny gadget stuff going on here. And then it's...
That was
I mean, I literally wrote that down. Kevin Klein in drag with a punch flower. I need that flower pin.
And hypno boobs.
Yes, the hypno boobs. Actually,
she already has them.
Are kind of funny.
Although I did.
We can't.
I did not get the first ew.
What did you say?
I did not get the first ew of the episode.
You did not.
That's unusual. I'm slacking off here. That opening scene with the guy being chased by the like ridiculous whirling blade, and the General McGrath character was played by Ted Levine.
Yes, Buffalo Bill.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he's got an unmistakable voice.
Yes, he does.
I thought you scientists were supposed to be smart.
Yep.
Oh, wait, was he a great big fat person? You know,
God, I don't even know what I was listening to, but I just heard on some podcast where they were talking about when Ted Levine auditioned to be Buffalo Bill.
Mm.
He came in and he did like whatever the sides were, whatever it was that they wanted people to do. He did those and they were like, oh yeah, okay. And then he started to walk away. Like they did, they're like, okay, you know, we'll call you blah, blah, blah. Mm. He started to walk away and he stopped and he went, there's this one thing. Can I just try one thing? And they were like, yeah, sure. You know, come on. And they like came over and he did that scene from the movie where he like, tucks and then he's like, you know, oh, you think you're sexy or whatever he says. I don't remember what the line is where he's like talking to himself and he's like,
would you fuck me?
He's like looking at himself in a mirror and he's visualizing himself as a woman and like that whole scene that like really set that character over the top as being like terrifyingly creepy.
Yeah, so
yeah
good.
He did that in the audition, and they were all just like,
"Sold."
Yeah. Okay. No.
Don't call us. We will call you.
Yeah, exactly. And also, maybe, ooh, don't call us.
Kind of, yeah.
We're not giving you our
just
number.
Just right.
We want you. This is why you
don't call us, because we want you. We just don't want you to
movie,
call us.
But we don't want to be.
We don't need
yeah.
that.
So, yeah.
Cry.
Yeah. I don't remember where I just...
That guy's a really capable actor. He's really recognizable.
It's a star-studded cast. This movie fails on so many levels.
Yeah, okay, you have Shakespearean-ass freaking Kenneth fucking Branagh.
Yeah,
Branagh,
who I'm
for heaven's
pretty
sake.
Sure is Sir...
Oh, he might be by now.
No,
yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
I don't think he was at this moment.
No.
And I got to go with the palace did not see this film.
it probably pushed
in
his sureness back a decade.
Right.
Like, we were going to give you a commander of the British Empire, but
I love the work that he does, but that was just.
Hey, Kenneth Branagh got to eat too.
Trust me when I say in 1999, Kenneth Branagh had plenty going on that his ass did not need this movie to eat. Like, I get that, like, Selma Hayek got to eat. So I kind of understand 1999 Selma Hayek.
I don't know, man. She had just done Desperado. And
Desperado's 95.
Yeah.
Well, this is 4 years later.
She was working on...
Dusk to Dawn, was she in that?
Dogma.
Yes, she was.
Dusk to Dawn. Oh, yes. Yes, Dancing with a Snake. Yeah, that...
Yeah, I
that
couldn't remember
suck.
If that was her.
Right. But again, 1999, Ken Branagh is not...
Yeah.
Sorry.
I mean, it might have been like just at that point, like, you know what? I could use a pool. But like, Kenneth Branagh, like, he freaking directed, in my opinion, probably one of the best... Hamlet versions ever. That's like a freaking 5 hour one.
Yes.
Like he directed that shit.
Right.
He directed Thor.
Yeah.
Like, that's not like, something to be.
I liked Thor.
I like Thor too. It's just the eyebrows. I'm telling you, if they hadn't fucked up Hemsworth's eyebrows in that movie and not cast Natalie Portman, but that's my own personal.
But like Kenneth Branagh, freaking Much Ado About Nothing.
Yeah.
Hamlet.
Yeah.
He was freaking Henry V.
Right.
Like, you know. And then he was also this
fucking turd.
The pedigree in this film should have made it great. Director, producer, act, and it's awful. Awful.
Mm-hmm. Well, the guys that originally wrote the script actually tried to get their names removed from the
movie.
Good
for them. They should have.
Yeah. I can't imagine. Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, apparently they'd written... like an action drama, like the comedy was not there, and then they added the spider and they added like all this other stuff, and it's just like wasn't the same movie.
An action drama that kind of
like
feels like what the TV show was.
Who was Jim West?
And you
Conrad,
asked me,
Robert Conrad.
Robert Conrad, correct.
When did it air initially?
It aired in the late 60s. I think it was like, it was four seasons, and it was a lot of fun, and the TV show was crazy. It was James Bond in the Wild West. He had the gadgets. Like you asked me earlier, Kathleen, did he have the gadgets that came out of the sleeves and the toe knives and all that? It was a lot more grounded in the TV show as, like the early James Bond stuff. Was definitely much more grounded. There wasn't giant spiders walking around. They didn't have flying machines, right? They had a...
But they were like Secret Service agents, right?
Yeah. Jim West was a CIA agent?
CIA?
I think.
I'm pretty sure they were Secret Service.
And then Artemis Gordon was... I'm going to get this wrong, and we're going to get some feedback, and people are going to yell at us. I don't give a shit. this is what I vaguely remember is Artemis Gordon was employed by the U.S. government as an inventor to help Jim West. Whatever.
So he was like the Q.
Yes, exactly. It's exactly what it was.
Yeah, this says that he was Secret Service agent James T. West.
Okay.
Yeah,
he is definitely James Bond because he's every woman he meets, he's smooching. He's smooching a different girl in every single episode. It's It's awesome. Because he is suave and debonair and much like a maverick character. Mm-hmm. He can do no wrong, and he gets into trouble and he gets out of trouble and so many cool things. And he fights a lot of really cool villains. Like there's like, hold on. Wait a minute. Hey, Dave.
Yes.
I got a game to play.
Oh, Christ. All right.
So we have a game to play tonight, and this is what we're going to call it. Did Jim West do battle with this in the original TV show?
Oh, I've not seen the original TV show.
That's so okay.
This is going to be a full-on guessing game.
Yeah. Right? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So we're going to find out whether or not Jim West has done battle with said character that we either made up or might have actually been in the show through four seasons and two television movies.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, Dave, did Jim West do this in the original? Right. Hey,
no.
These beers are alcoholic.
Is this a yes no response? Like, what is Dave supposed to?
Well, here's the thing. I am going to ask you in a rapid fire session, yes or no question, whether Jim West did battle with said opponent or not.
Okay, hit me.
These points will be tallied, and prizes or raspberries will be dolled out by yours truly. Dave, are you ready to play? Did Jim West do battle with this in the original TV show?
Fine.
Wow, we are enthusiastic about all this work that we did to create said game. Oh, boy. Okay. Dave, did Jim West do battle with this in the original TV show, An Evil Dwarf?
Yes.
He did in multiple episodes. As a matter of fact, we will get back to that guy in just a little bit. Did he do battle with the KKK, the Ku Klux Klan?
Yes.
He did not do battle with the Ku Klux Klan. Did Jim West battle the Kraken?
That seems like he wouldn't, but so no?
He did battle with a Kraken in episode 86 called Night of the Kraken. Ted Knight cameoed in that episode, by the way.
Ted Knight.
Okay, so wait, like they're in the West, right?
Don't worry about it.
I am going to worry about it.
Salt Lake.
Yeah.
Okay.
Did Jim West do battle with Satan?
Yes.
That is fake. He did not do battle with actual Satan himself.
Oh, so skilled in your
Jim West, did Jim West do battle with this in the original TV show? Did he do battle with an accountant?
Yes.
He did. Episode 87 in Night of the Fugitives, he did battle with an accountant. Did Jim West do battle with androids?
Was it Westworld?
That's a good question.
Yes.
Different show. He did do battle with androids in episode 32 called Night of the Big Blast. Did Jim West do battle with a green-skinned alien woman?
Ooh. No.
He did. Oh, but he did. He did do battle. Well, he didn't actually battle her. He smooched her quite a bit.
I was going to say, was he taking tips from Captain Kirk?
Oh, so I was right. He did not battle a monster.
Well, she was in an episode of Wild Wild West, and she wasn't actually an alien.
So I was correct.
Sort of. Episode 34.
I'm going to give myself a yes.
Night of the Flying Pie Plate was the name of the episode.
The episode is called Night of the Flying Pie Plate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's great.
Had Jim West done battle with werewolves in the original TV show?
Yes.
It is correct. In episode 55, Night of the Wolf. Now, you did have a question there. They don't always turn out to be actual werewolves or actual green-skinned women. You get where I'm going.
Yeah.
Okay. Had Jim West ever done battle with a time traveler?
Yes.
Correct. Episode 43, Night of the Lord of Limbo. He did battle with a time traveler. And actually, Jim West did a lot of time traveling. It was a really cool episode, regardless. Did Jim West ever do battle with fire ants?
Fire ants? Yes.
That is incorrect.
Damn it.
Fire ants is a fake thing, and
Thank you, Troy, for that one, I think.
MacGyver did a battle with fire ants.
He did.
Yes, he did. One of the first episodes. Mm-hmm. The first episode, maybe.
That's a really good one.
Here's a good one. Did Jim West ever do battle with a murder piano?
A murder piano? I'm just going to say yes. I want it to be true.
It's true. Episode 48, yes. Night of the Vicious Valentine. And the mother from Bewitched was the...
Endora
was the antagonist in that episode.
That's really funny.
Had Jim West ever done battle with an Aztec god?
Sure.
That is fake. That's one of the weird fake ones. Okay. You think in the Wild Wild West and the
there was a lot of fake, not a kraken, right?
Oh, this is true.
So, okay. Yeah, I mean, a kraken is not appropriate, but like
Quetzalcoatl, right?
Appropriate, close enough.
Dave, has Jim West ever done battle with zombies?
Oh God, no.
Incorrect. In a very uncomfortable episode, episode 77, Night of the Undead. It's very uncomfortable. Lots of stereo voodoo stuff. It's not easy to watch. Okay. Dave, did Jim West ever do battle with the Invisible Man?
Fuck. Yes.
It is correct. Or an Invisible Man, whatever you want to talk about. Episode 26, Night of the Burning Diamond. There was definitely a man that could turn himself invisible.
Okay, so it wasn't like Victorian England, sort of like the Invisible Man.
No. This is within the boundaries of the Wild Wild West TV show in 1880, whatever.
Which sounds like it has no boundaries at all.
You know, season two of Wild Wild West was wild. It was cuckoo crazy pants. Anyway, did Jim West ever do battle with an elephant?
Yes.
Incorrect. That is one of the few creatures that he did not battle. An elephant was not a correct answer. But, Dave, did Jim West ever do battle with a sea dragon?
Yes.
Correct. Episode 37, Night of the Watery Death. Now, the sea dragon was actually a.
Like a Scooby-Doo villain.
Yeah,
it was very much like old man McGillicuddy
or whatever.
Most of the Jim West opponents turn out to be something sort of a Scooby-Doo
a
villain.
A masked man trying to do.
So this was a cardboard thing that shot sparklers and actually could sink ships. It had
Yes, because so many ships are sunk in Utah.
Right, that Great Salt Lake is just getting bigger and bigger.
It is. Dave, did Jim West ever do battle with an opera singer?
Yes.
That is fake. I don't know who made that one up.
That's a good one, though.
That's a good one,
though.
I don't
remember. I think we might have.
Had Jim West ever done battle with a ghost?
Yes.
Correct. Episode 40, Night of the Man-Eating House. Did Jim West ever do battle with a crocodile?
That seems impossible, so yes.
Episode 4, Night of the Sudden Death, he or a stuntman actually rolled around with a live crocodile.
Ah!
It was really uncomfortable. Like, that thing's going to kill you.
That's sort of like Sean Connery swimming with an actual bull shark.
True.
All
right, Dave. Sorry. Has Jim West ever met or done battle with Minor 49er?
I don't know what that is, so I'm going to say yes.
that's fake. It's a Scooby-Doo thing.
That one was my suggestion.
So, Dave, did Jim West ever do battle with Quetzalcoatl?
No.
Correct. He did not do battle with Quetzalcoatl, although I do like saying Quetzalcoatl. Yeah.
Well, you talked about Aztec gods, and he didn't fight one. So,
right. Yeah. Right.
Was that shit?
I should have maybe switched those two around. Okay, did Jim West ever do battle with... Boris Karloff.
Ooh, I'm going to say yes because I want it to be true.
It is true. Yay. Episode 30, Night of the Golden Cobra. And it's a really uncomfortable movie.
Why?
It's because Boris Karloff plays a Mid-Eastern sheik. And he wants Jim West to teach his three sons how to fight. And they all have their scimitars. Mm. And they want to learn how to fight in the Wild Wild West style. and it's really uncomfortable.
Oh, no.
Okay.
But it's fucking Boris Karloff, so it's kind of cool. Dave, I've got three more for you, but are you ready for this?
Sure.
Are you ready for this? Okay, here we go. Did Jim West ever do battle with apes?
Yes.
Correct. Episode 79, Night of the Simian Terror. Okay, two more, Dave. This is for all of the marbles. Did Jim West do battle with the president?
Yes.
It's fake. He has never done battle with the president, although I can't imagine that ever didn't happen, you know? with Ulysses, even in the TV show, Ulysses S. Grant was all over the wares. So it is surprising that someone didn't take his guys and maybe, whatever. I'm surprised. That one surprised me. Finally,
it was Andrew Johnson.
One last. This is for everything.
After
Dave.
Lincoln was Johnson.
If you get this wrong, you lose. If you get this right, because for my
I'm
math,
tallying right now,
you're at even.
I don't know.
That is incorrect.
Well, whatever. I haven't been keeping track. I'm just saying that you're even right now. If you get this right, you win. If you get this wrong, you lose.
Fine.
Dave, did Jim West ever do battle in the original TV show with a killer tuning fork?
Yes.
Damn it! That is correct! In episode 91, the night of the... Oh, shit.
The night of the oh, shit.
Avaricus Actuary.
Actually...
What?
You did amazingly well, considering that you were just doing, like... Yes or no, like...
Well
yes.
Done, Dave.
Never
you
having
got
seen
15
the show.
Out of 25.
Yeah. Oh, you keep so good. Okay. Well done, Dave. You are the winner of the prize tonight, which is another beer.
Yay!
You get some of your self-respect back for fucking choosing
for
this fucking movie.
This fucking movie.
Yay!
I don't really.
No, probably you don't deserve it. You don't deserve it, but here's to you, Dave.
Here's to you, Dave. Well done, sir.
Yay.
Well done.
I like you guys too.
To piggyback on the game, the TV show is generally cuckoo crazy pants. He's a debonair, suave.
So he's like
fighter
what,
guy,
like a marshal or a
Secret Service.
He's Secret Service, okay. And he and Artemis Gordon are rolling around on his choo-choo train, making sure that the government
Service.
And the states are all being safe. Mm.
Which is weird because isn't the Secret Service's entire job to protect the president?
Well, yeah,
it eventually
whatever.
Became that.
Yeah,
the Secret Service is a branch of the Treasury Department,
right?
So they were formed right around like the 1860s, I think.
According to the movie last night, this right. movie, it happened at the end of the
in 1869. When
that would be incorrect
twice,
right?
Because I'm pretty sure that Lincoln started the Secret Service to stop counterfeiting,
just like Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
All of his secrets.
Like Lincoln, actually, he did have a security detail. I don't know if they were treasury agents, but
he probably needed one. I'm gonna guess.
Yeah, they might have slipped up once.
I for sure.
Oh.
It's about time we rate this thing, Dave. What do you think?
Okay. Yes, I'm.
I mean,
I'm finished.
Clearly,
I don't want to think about this movie anymore. So
no, let's get rid of this.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's put this behind us.
Yes. So. We here at Good Beer Bad Movie Night have a unique rating system. We have the six-pack rating. Well, we'll rate a movie from zero beers to six beers. Zero beers means you need no alcohol. You like the movie as is. Six beers means you have to be completely inebriated in order to even tolerate this movie. So, that being said, I'm going to start with me. Six. Done. Next. Kathleen.
It's six for me. I fell asleep through part of it.
Cool. Done. Troy.
Six. Yeah, fuck this movie.
Troy, six, done. Pete.
So I was thinking, six!
Pete, six, done. Six
movie.
Is across the board.
This movie sucks.
Dave's record holds.
I hold my record for the most reviled movies.
Is this three or four?
The only thing is, I almost went five just because it's not as bad as The Swarm.
The Swarm!
But fuck this movie.
Fuck this movie.
Fuck this movie.
Fuck this movie.
Fuck this movie
directly. Do not watch this movie under any circumstances.
Like, nobody likes this movie. The people who are in this movie and were a part of this movie don't like this
don't
movie.
Don't like this movie.
Yeah.
Don't watch this movie.
So don't watch
on
this
record
movie.
As having said, fuck this movie.
Yeah.
Fuck this movie.
Yeah, like, this is not a resume builder. Just fuck this movie.
No.
So.
And Dave, your beers were strong.
They were meant to be. We needed them.
You're
we did.
Home.
Hey, Kathleen, can you please tell our listeners, excuse me.
You want to try that again?
No.
Nope. Hey, how they can get a hold of us? How fortuitous can they get a hold of us?
Well, I don't know that they should want to get a hold of us after this movie. So
it's
no.
not our fault. This movie. This movie is not our fault.
Well, it's Dave's fault.
It's
stir not the cup of bitterness that I have mixed for myself.
Oh my God!
That's from the Lord of the Rings, actually.
It is.
That's from Denethor who said
that
in the book.
Off the rails. All right, dear listener, if you want to reach out and I say it every time and you're not coming through and then we have to watch bullshit like this movie, give us a movie recommendation. You can email us at gbbmnpodcast@gmail.com. You can use that same complicated set of letters to find us on Twitter, on Insta, we are Good Beer Bad Movie Night, or on Facebook, we are Good Beer Bad Movie Night Group. Let your fingers do the walking. Ooh. And reach
and
out and
comments do the
reach
talking.
Out and touch us.
Reach out and give us a better movie suggestion.
Oh,
and
boy, Dave, these are beers. These are beers.
Yep, they're beers.
God.
All right,
man,
so
beers are beers.
Next month,
beers are beers.
These beers are
oh man,
beers.
This shit smells like shit.
These beers are beers.
Next month is Kathleen's birthday.
Kathleen's
so
birthday.
Right.
Well, okay, so we've
it's my faux birthday.
It's your unbirthday, I think, because September is just too hectic for you, and I have plans for September. By the way, you can't wait. So, but your unbirthday month is next month. So, do you have something, or do you want to hold off on it?
I'm going to hold off for now. I have an idea, but my idea is very much not in line with Good Beer Bad Movie. And
it's my
birthday. I can do whatever I want, but I usually try to do something that is, you know, themed-ish.
So you'll make an announcement on the Facebook.
Yes. The only thing I can tell you is that it is not going to be a Bruce Willis movie this time.
Oh, sad.
I know, but I need something different.
Bruce Willis movies.
Well, I wouldn't have done a Bruce Willis movie the last time either if some other podcast hadn't stolen my movie, and I'm still mad about it, so.
You'll have that. So that's it. We're running long, and we're just going to end this. We will see you next month, and until next time.
That's a fine-looking spider you have there.
Fuck you, movie.
Get the shit cooker rolling.
Let's cook some shit.
Ew.
You said it.
Ew is right.
Oh, fuck you, movie.
Or the
it cheered me up to hear you talk about having to smell your own poop.
Fuck you, movie.
Fuck. Get those writers to write yourself a movie.
Sorry.
Yeah, different. Everybody's got different equipment today.
Yeah.
Fuck you, movie.
Yeah.
God, fuck this movie.
Fuck this movie.
Fuck this.